Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and today as co-host for the Big Three, I'm joined by the delightful Roxanne Lawler. Welcome, Roxy.
Hello, my friend Matt. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
Good. Going good. Yeah. Lockdown life. It's all happening.
Just living the dream.
Living the Cronulla dream.
I can't bring myself to talk about lockdown. It's too triggering. It's too hard. So let's talk about the series that we have been on for the last 9 weeks. Raider wrapped it up for us on Sunday. What have been your reflections of this series as a whole, the topography of discipleship?
I love the topography of discipleship. We've come to calling it the topography, not the typography, which is a whole different thing about stylized letters. Mm. So that's a win, I think.
A learning experience there.
I've really enjoyed seeing how people grow and how the different contexts help us mature as Christians and, just shape us more into the image of what God has for us.
Yeah.
So I have enjoyed the series. I've also liked the rhyming nature of it. I'm not going to lie on that, you know.
That kids ministry work is just coming through.
Exactly. The you and a few, you and the crew. You know, I want to keep going. Yeah, you and the slew.
You and the zoo.
You and the zoo. I want them all.
You and the barbecue.
Yeah.
It's just the options are endless.
They are.
But it was cool. I know on Sunday after the service in the evening, we got onto Zooms and asked those who were a part of our service, like, which context has been most significant for you in this season. And it is really cool hearing the different stories and experiences of all the different contexts and different people for different reasons have kind of found a different context, helpful in the development of their discipleship. And you really do get this very holistic view of, I even think like a very holistic view of how we are created and how the creativity of God works in all these different aspects of our lives and how they are all working towards our growth as followers of Jesus.
That was actually really cool, I thought.
It is a very cool thing.
And also just for people to be able to identify what has been important in this particular season. Mm. So, and, you know, in my Zoom group, people were talking about, in years gone by, this particular one had been helpful, but right now this is this is giving them life and love and just, a whole new perspective on things. So I really loved that. That it changes.
Yeah, that whole Venn diagram the circles are moving and it's okay for certain seasons to be more prominent in certain contexts than others.
Yeah, not to feel bad about that, but just to fully just dive into it and embrace it.
And just live it. Yeah. Live it. Very good. Awesome. Love it. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during our online services this past Sunday. Rox and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who missed it, Mark continued in our series, The Topography of Discipleship, Finding Our Way as the Church Today, exploring the fifth and final context of discipleship, the public context, you and the crowd. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Rox, I'm interested on your thoughts coming out of Mark's message. What stood out for you in all that he was saying?
Ooh, okay. So I think Mark sort of got really passionate at one point.
It got fiery. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, exactly.
You and I were definitely off to the side saying our amens.
We were.
And
we were doing preach-its. There was a lot of spiritual yummies going on the side there. So I think that was the thing that impacted me, I think, the most. Mm. We talk about the crowd and we have an association that it's the gathered people, physically within a building, and we have an understanding of what that means. But I think Mark kind of took a rocket to that and just blew that out of the water and said that's actually not what it's about. We never stop being the people of God. It's not contingent upon us gathering in a particular building in a particular time on a particular day. Mm. It's who we are. It's part of our identity that we are the people of God. Mm. That sort of crowd exists wherever, so I really love that. And then his whole shouting at the camera, saying you count, online counts.
I see you matter.
So that, I think that was great. And I think a lot of people needed to hear that.
Mm. And really relevant, I think, for where we're at today, which Mark kind of spoke to, with COVID in the greater Sydney area and all the restrictions that we're facing and that we haven't been able to meet face-to-face in this physical building.
Yeah.
I love that Mark, called it out and kind of said that does not mean that we have not experienced the church, that we have not experienced the public context since, well, when? June?
Since was that, we locked down. Yeah, I don't even remember. Last, I don't know. It's been more than 2 weeks. It's that's been, all I got. I
know. Gladys, you lied. But, yeah, I think that was a really powerful and important message for us to to hear and to grapple with, because obviously our experience of the public context has looked very different in the last 18 months, but it hasn't lacked in value. And I think that's an important thing for us to be remembering and considering as we move forward, because we don't know what church is going to look like for the next, you know, hot minute. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three questions submitted through Slido this week. Rox, what are our big three for today?
We have three awesome ones. The first one is, what does it look like to experience inspiration and momentum, which I think we're calling movementum.
Movementum.
Movementum within the public context. So what's the inspo and the movementum in the public context? The second one is, where have we misunderstood the role of the public context? And the third one is, how does this public context overlap with the other five contexts? So where's the sort of Venn diagram? What's the place of it? The you and the crowd, but the you and the
within
few
the bigger
and the
picture.
You and the team.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's been a question that we've been asking each and every week, and I think it'll be helpful, particularly from this perspective, because we now have unpacked the five contexts, so we can kind of inform that a little bit better. Well, I think there's only one thing missing, and that is the man himself. Welcome, the Reverend Dr. Mark Rader.
Thank you, Matt. Never sure how to handle the Reverend Dr. Mark.
To say, yes, I am. The doctor
like
is in the
that's
house.
That's the Australian, like, coming through in you, like, that you just can't handle the
accolades.
Yeah, because it's like, we just can't do that in Australia.
No. Well, it's not so much that I can't handle them. It's just that there is an element of mockery implied.
No!
What? Us? Would we?
I am
never
shocked and astounded but that you would have ever assumed that I have nothing
you're shocked
but
and astounded
admiration.
That, you're shocked and astounded that I picked up on it. No, no. It's the, I think,
please, I think my seven-year-old can pick up on it.
The one place where titles still function in Australian society seems to be in education.
Yes.
So like, you know, the principal or, you know, this is the doctor so-and-so or whatever the case might be. But in every other context in Australia, to go around wielding your titles like they matter is a sure way to be brought down a peg or two. Yeah. So I do remember thinking, yeah, I've just spent a whole bunch of time getting some titles that I can't actually ever use in public. So, yeah, it's,
you can on very important letters.
Very important letters. So I can bust it out on those, on a reference letter. I like writing those things.
Right.
Like,
maybe
this
it matters.
This guy's a big deal. Yeah. He's got things to say.
He's a big deal. Yeah, something like that.
Well, Rader, you wrapped up the series for us on Sunday. And before we get into the big three, you know, what has been kind of your hope for us as a community of faith as we've explored these five contexts now that it's kind of come to a conclusion for us?
Yeah, I probably have to say that I think I had higher hopes for the series as a whole. And I think a lot of that's been undone by the fact that we haven't been face to face. And while the online experience is good and valid and all of that sort of stuff, it's been a little bit harder to gauge.
Yeah.
People's engagement. And so that's been not disappointing. That's probably not the right word for it, but just it's been harder to determine whether it's been as successful as I would have hoped it to be.
Yeah.
But I think the language that we've kind of started to develop around, you know, God and you and a few, you and a crew, that sort of stuff is helpful for us. I think that it would have opened the eyes of many people to see that our discipleship is shaped by lots of different things. It's not just coming to church and being part of a life group or, you know, coming to church and making sure I read the Bible in the morning or whatever the case might be, that discipleship looks different in different contexts. They all do different components. So I think that there's been some real wins in that space. And it's been helpful, you know, I mean, it's been helpful for, I think, for me to kind of try to figure out what we mean when we're talking about discipleship. You know, if we're going to be a community of faith that's really focused on that, then, well, I need to do some thinking on that too. And so, you know, being able to teach in that space has been really helpful for me to kind of go, yeah, that's what I mean. You know, you know, they say if you want to learn something, you should teach it. And like, I found that to be true. I mean, the first couple of years that I taught preaching at Moreland College. I'm pretty sure I was the only one who learned anything. I was learning heaps though, you know? So, but I do feel that there was a real sense for myself. And I think for us as a team to kind of go, yeah, that's what we're on about. Mm. And, you know, so when we talked about the personal context, we're like, no, while there's other ways that that could be expressed, life groups are, that's for us. That's the, you know, and so that was kind of an easy one for us to kind of decide on. But I think it's been helpful for us to think through what's lacking and where we need to grow and develop. So I, you know, at that level, I've been really pleased. Yeah. I think I just would have loved to have had a little bit more opportunity to engage with people's responses.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously our hopes for particularly the evening service with the way that we do church, with our roundtable discussions and being to kind of being able to have that opportunity to have the in real time response. Like, hey, we just heard this. Let's talk about it. Let's flesh it out. They've been super powerful. And obviously we've been doing that on Zoom, but yeah, kind of being
just a little bit trickier. Yeah. So anyway, but that, you know, all that to be said, I think it's been a really helpful series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been really, I'm glad we did it. Mm. I'm glad we did it, even though I think I would have preferred to have done it face to face.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's good.
Well, let's wrap up the series by unpacking the fifth and final context, the public context. So let's get into the big three.
So the first question is, what does it look like to experience inspiration and movementum within the public context?
For those of you listening thinking, movementum, what?
That is not a word.
It is now.
That is taken from the book, Discipleship That Fits by Alex Absalom.
I feel like you're washing your hands of it. You're like, that was not me.
That's right. If you love it, it was. and what they mean by that is essentially hearing stories that place us in the story of God. Mm. And so it's kind of part of the inspiration, which is the strengthening of resolve and the encouragement to kind of get at it. Mm. And then the third component that they focus on is that it's often wrapped around teaching. And they actually talk a little bit about a concert as the idea that people gather around an external resource. Right. So often when you're talking about the public context, you're gathering around, say, you know, like a worship team and a sermon, right? Like those are the two kind of big things. We might also gather around the communion table or through giving or whatever the case might be. All those, and the communion table makes a little bit more sense than giving does for us in terms of something we gather around. But there's an external resource that you're all kind of there for. And I think that has some really significant implications then for the relational component of this relational context, right? Because you can be at a concert or, you know, a play or something where you don't know the people you're with necessarily, but because you're all there to see this band or this performer or this movie, there's a sense of camaraderie that
absolutely.
comes by the fact that we're both wearing the t-shirt of the band or, you know, whatever the case might be. And so I don't need to know you, but we're all connected. And I think there's something really helpful for us to recognize then when we talk about that in a church context, that the relationships are driven by what you're gathered around rather than just by the relationships.
Yeah.
Right? Like I think about the most profound examples of my own experiences of the public context. And the things that spring to mind are actually conferences, retreats, camps, those sorts of kind of those peak events. Yeah. And when I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, I very rarely knew everybody. I knew some people well, right? So you go with a group and so there's people from your youth group or your church who you're part of. And so you might sit with them, you might sit elsewhere, whatever the case might be. But you're gathered with all sorts of people to hear often in the context of an evangelical background, to hear the message, right? And to worship together like those. And those are the things that stand out to me. You know, the worship was often really inspirational in those moments, right? The times when it's impacted my discipleship the most, it's just been, you know, big and energetic or moving or like just you know, something happens in that worship context that seems to be bigger than what normally happens, right?
Yeah.
And whether it's because you haven't had enough sleep or, you know, whether there's something about being with lots of other people. And often, you know, those conferences and whatnot, you know, the speakers that they bring in are quite accomplished, which doesn't hurt, you know, spirit can speak through anyone and anything, but, you know, it doesn't hurt when you've got someone who's like really skillful. And so the opportunity to listen to that situation. And I think the third thing about the public context, and again, I think there's a distinction between those conferences and say a Sunday, but there's something about the conferences where we are prepared to be spoken to.
Yeah.
Right? Like I go to camp and I'm like, God's going to say something to me.
I've come expectant.
Yeah. Mm. And so I think that really shapes heaps of our experience of the public context, right? I show up and it's a conference and I'm like, the worship's going to be great. Mm. And because, you know, they got a little bit more money and more resources, it is. It's amazing. And I don't know which comes first, the good band or my expectation, you know, and probably what comes first is the spirit, right? But, you know, there's something about that. And then when the speaker stands up, whether I've heard about them or not, I'm like, I'm expectant. Mm-hmm. Like I've given up my weekend, I've given up my week, I've given up my night, I'm here. Oh, all right, I'm ready. And I'm not sure that always transfers for us to Sundays. You know, if you're part of a church that's more than 100 people on a Sunday morning, I'm not sure that we often come with that level of expectation.
No, I was just about to say, like it feels like the routine of our weekly gathering has kind of minimized that expectation for us because – you know, some weeks we come and there's something really profound that happens for us. And other weeks we're here and, you know, we hear the word and it's good. It's encouraging. Yep. Like, but, you know, you walk away and you're like, yeah, cool. Like
church done. Tick.
Church done. Yeah.
Let's go to the beach. Yeah. Oh, wait, we can't. You know,
so. You know what I mean? Like I just wonder how we bring that kind of that level of expectancy into something that is quite routine and scheduled and follows a similar structure every single week.
Yep. So I think those are some of the things that it looks like. Mm. But then, you know, so on any given Sunday, you know, when you attend a public context space, I mean, I think there's something about expectation, but there's also just the awareness that we want to be, and I think this is part of the challenge. So this is the only context that we're not doing 2 weeks of because it's the end of term. So we can't possibly stretch it out. But we're not doing the kind of the how of it. But in the book, the second chapter talks about creating services that lend themselves to inspiration, that momentum or movementum space in teaching. And I'm not sure that we always do that.
Yeah.
And so I think we can end up, I know this is kind of edging into the next question, but we can end up focusing on relationships.
Yeah.
Which are not bad, but it's not what the public context does well.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the great space for building relationships. It's just not. Mm. I think we need to be very aware that we're trying to build a sense of where people can be expectant, but where people are also encouraged in their faith, not browbeaten or, you know, challenged every week, although there's certainly an element of that in terms of, you know, challenge to step out.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people are connecting themselves with the story of God and that, you know, there's an opportunity to hear from God in that space. Mm. So I think that there's a few things that we sometimes miss in that, but those seem to me to be the things that stood out to me, right? Sometimes it was the quality of the band or the experience or the conference center or whatever it was, but often it was a matter of my expectation and kind of a slightly more openness, shall I say, to what the Spirit might be saying to me rather than the, oh, it's Sunday again, so I guess we'll trot off to church.
Yeah, like 5:30, you know. You got to get there.
Yeah, and a lot of people, I think, come to church for that kind of hit for the week. You know, and I think for them, they probably come a little bit expectant in that space. So I think that's part of it. I don't know, like, what do you guys reckon?
Yeah, I liked what you said about the whole when we gather together, even though we don't know everyone, there's a connection, there's a kind of a camaraderie around a common goal or common interest or whatever it is. And I know like in my experience, when I have experienced that in the public context, it's been incredibly freeing. The kind of, embarrassment that you might feel to kind of dare to kind of step out of your comfort zone and try something different and kind of lean into what maybe God's trying to challenge you in that moment. Those moments where I have kind of found that courage is because I've looked around the room, and even though I don't know everyone, even though I can't say, oh, well, I feel safe because I know everyone in this room and no one will, you know, rip into me or poke fun at me or whatever it is, I know that we're actually all here for the same thing.
Mm.
And I can actually even see other people stepping out of their comfort zones in different ways.
Yep.
And that then gives me permission to do the same.
Mm.
So like, I think that there's a real freedom that comes in that space that kind of, you know, sometimes we can just get so, I don't know, bogged down when it comes to experiencing what God is trying to teach us in those moments and kind of get a little bit like, you know, shy, embarrassed, reserved. But when we actually, when we do all meet together and when we acknowledge, actually, no, everyone here wants the same thing and everyone else here is searching for the same thing, then that provides a freedom for us each to step out in that search and to actually even really be supporting one another, even if we don't know each other. Mm. Rox could be on the other side of the room. We may not know each other, but if I see her experiencing worship in a really profound way, it's going to encourage me to step out of my comfort zone to do the same.
Mm.
You can, and I think, borrow my confidence in some respect.
Thanks, friend. I need it.
Well, you know, that's what we do though, isn't it? We are made comfortable and confident by others doing what we would like to do ourselves.
Yeah.
And so there's part of that herd. It's almost like a herd mentality, really, that we can actually look around and go, okay, this is okay, this is safe, this is a space where I might be able to close my eyes in worship or lift a hand or clap along or shout out that, you know, hallelujah, amen, or whatever it is that we're going to do. I kind of sort of almost see it like going out to a fine restaurant. Like, I love food, but I cannot remember what I had for dinner last Tuesday. But I can remember the moments where I've been out to a really brilliant restaurant. Mm. You know, like I've, you know, gone somewhere and experienced this beautiful fine dining.
Mm.
And they're the moments that in food land stick in my head.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, you know, there's moments where I look back at my own journey and to have those mountaintop experiences. Obviously the difference in a restaurant is you're not unified with the people. You just kind of happen to be there at the same time. You're not really all there, you know, having the prawns or whatever. Mm. But they stick in your mind. And I think that's a real gift. It's a real gift that God gives us to have these mountaintop moments that just, you know, that, you know, when you're 60, you're going to remember what it is that God said to you, you know, at this camp or, you know, in this special service.
Yeah.
It's such a blessing.
I think the challenge is in part then to make sure that we're not expecting the mountaintop experience every week.
Yeah.
But at the same time, doing what we can to encourage people to come expectant.
Yeah.
Mm. That God may be speaking to you today.
It may not be fine dining, but it's a meal that you need.
That's right.
You know, it's
spiritual equivalent.
Yeah, it's nutrition. And it's what you need. It's still going to build you up, you know, build your body up, build your spiritual faith up.
Yeah. So. I think that's a good segue into question two. Ooh. So as we were kind of wrapping up that question, it felt like the next thing to kind of discuss is, well, then what are some of those misconceptions that we can have about the role of the public context? And we kind of skimmed across a few already in question one. But what do you see as the misconceptions that Christians are bringing into the public context that actually undermine what the public context is there to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think there'd probably be a handful. I'm not sure that these are in any specific order. Hmm. But, you know, I think that we can tend to forget that church has an important role in other people's discipleship too.
Yeah.
You know, like me showing up to church is not just about me. Mm. It's also about people who are around me.
Yeah.
You know, when I visit another church or when I used to, and was asked to speak or something, I always sat near the front, in part because I thought that was the best place for me to sit, to be close to where I needed to be.
Yeah.
And I always tried to sing along with the songs, even if I didn't know them. And the reality was, it was to try to be a model of this is how you engage in stuff.
Yeah.
I was assuming that everyone was going to do the same thing, but I just didn't feel comfortable sitting at the back or sitting to one side or not singing because I didn't know the songs. It was like, have a go. Like, because it's not actually just about me. Like you guys talked about, borrowing courage or whatever. Yeah. There's something in that about like my engagement with the service is actually really important for the people around me, as well as for me. So I think that's one thing that we miss. Mm. I think that the expectation that every week should be a mountaintop experience, and then that might be speaking more to those of us who lead those services than people who attend. But I think it can work both ways. I think there could be an expectation from people who are involved in the planning and the performance of the service, who kind of do the pieces in the service, to have undue pressure on themselves to make it amazing, rather than just kind of real. And you want to do the best you can and all that sort of stuff. But I think we can put the cart before the horse. But I think people can come with expectations of, hey, this should be better than that, or I didn't like those songs, or that sermon didn't do it for me, or whatever the case might be. And so I think we can bring some false expectations in that space. So I think that's part of it.
And I think that also speaks to false value as well, because in those moments, we then focus on the practical things that we think can be changed to make church better. Like, if we had had a different songs or a different style of music, or if the message was done in a more creative way, or whatever it is, and we get bogged down in those finer details, and we actually put value in the performance, as you say, as opposed to, well, actually, what's God doing here? Our expectation of church becomes about what we bring or what the team can bring in that space, as opposed to what God is bringing in that space.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary of that. And I think then thirdly, and this is the one I picked up on Sunday, I think we can end up making the public context load bearing. We talked about this before in this series. I'm pretty sure we talked about it in the teaser trailer video, or sorry, the trailer podcast for this. But I think that we can place so much emphasis on Sundays that we try to do too much with it.
Yeah.
So we try to build a sense of community on Sundays. Mm. And the public context just doesn't, it's just not built for that. It's great for meeting new people.
Yeah.
And it's great for ticking over relationships with people that we know. It's not great for depth. It just isn't. Yeah. And so we can sometimes try to make it more of a community, like an experience of community, rather than an encounter with God. Mm. And while you don't want to be, cold and unwelcoming and just, come and sit down and listen to what God's going to say to you, you do need to recognize some of the limitations of the public context. So I think we can sometimes make it load-bearing in that sense, or we make it load-bearing in the sense that we don't invest in the other four relational contexts and try to get Sunday to do the heavy lifting of discipleship. Mm. So I judge, and I don't mean judge in a bad way, but I make an assessment on your discipleship by how frequently you're in church. Mm. Now, is that an indicator? Yeah, probably. Is it the indicator? Mm. Probably not. Mm. Right? Like, probably not. Someone could have a vibrant relationship with God in the divine context. They could be a part of a life group. They could have an intentional discipling relationship. They could be involved in ministry and only sporadically available on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Their discipleship can't be boiled down to what happens on Sunday. Yeah. And so I think that for me is, I think, perhaps the biggest way we've misrepresented it, where we've made Sunday the key metric and attendance at the public context the key metric for people's discipleship. Mm. And we've ended up collapsing all of discipleship into one event, one context that just can't handle the weight put upon it.
Which means we just get a substandard experience of the things that we could actually get fulfillment in other contexts.
Well, and I think, again, speaking as a leader, if we're not making disciples, perhaps it's because we're putting too much emphasis on one context, which, while it does something in our discipleship,
doesn't do everything.
Mm. It just doesn't. So how you know, that's part of our problem. It ends up to a really weak discipleship, I think, if we put too much emphasis on Sundays. And, you know, people's lives are really busy, and, you know, lockdown has just made it all the more clear that, you know, you can't rely on being in a building together. Mm. You know? So I think that, you know, at the end of the sermon, the bit where I got a little bit more impassioned was just the fact that, you know, what these five contexts I think remind us is that we never stop being the church.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to say that the church is all about making disciples, that's the task that Jesus left the church, well, then that means that any activity where people are engaged in becoming or following after Jesus, that's the church, the expression of the church. Whether you're by yourself reading the Bible and praying, you know, and praying not just for your life, but for the ministry of the community of faith that you're a part of, or meeting with that one or two, those one or two people who help you take your next steps to participate, or life groups, whatever the case might be, we never stop being the church. And that has, I think, enormous implications for us, like just enormous implications. So, you know, strengthening the other four contexts so that the public context for us here is free to do what it does best.
Yeah.
You know, where, yeah, we want to be welcoming. We want to help people start those relationships. We want to help people find their place in God's mission. But you know what? If you're going to make really deep friendships, it ain't going to be on a Sunday.
Yeah.
We want to start that process and get you into a place where you can. That's what we're going to do. But Sunday, oh man, it's just going to be, we really want to, you know, inspire people, encourage people.
Fill you up.
Tell the story. Yeah, fill you up. Good teaching, and just call it for what it is. This is what it is. This is what it does for your discipleship. Go out and do the rest of the stuff, right? Encourage people to make sure that those Venn diagram, there's overlap, right? So I think that's problematic. I think that's a big way that we miss it. And, you know, I think, you know, in the context of, you know, COVID and lockdowns, that whole misunderstanding of, you know, church being a physical building where you are physically attending, I think has some serious weaknesses as far as ecclesiology or our understanding of the church is concerned, because it suggests the only way we can call ourselves the church is if we gather together in a building. I'm pretty sure that ain't it. So, you know, that becomes, I think that becomes a real world application of why this is so important to get right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, awesome. What about you, Rox?
I really like what Mark had to say, and it just reminds me that sometimes when you come to church, you're actually not coming to receive; you're actually coming to give. And I think the expectation that we need to have as Christians is that God might be asking us to give on a Sunday as well. We're not just empty sponges that need you know, soaking. You know, that we have a role, and that could be, you know, interceding in prayer for somebody. It could be serving in a ministry on a Sunday. It could be just, you know, the fact that you are the one that starts the conversation. You are the one that says, "Hey, I want to get to know you. Let's go out for a coffee." It could be the smile that you give to someone who you think they are struggling. I think, you know, the expectation that we bring into Sunday needs to not just be what will God speak to us in, but also, like, what am I doing in order to be the hands and feet of Jesus in this space? You know, how can I be serving, even though I'm, you know, really I'm just sort of sitting in a chair and listening to the sermon and being encouraged, but also I do have a part to play thinking about myself.
In the book, they talk about that the center serves the margins in the public context, right? So people who are committed, and you know, it's often staff or ministry leaders or whatever it might be, they're serving.
Long-termers. Yeah. Mm.
And I think that's certainly true, but I do believe that everyone has a part to play in that space.
Yeah.
Even if it is just modeling, you know, like taking notes.
Yeah, sharing
even if
courage.
The message isn't really kind of hitting me, if it's something that's, you know, God's not really speaking to me in a really profound way, just demonstrating that I'm paying attention can be really encouraging to those around
singing
you.
The song.
And I think that, singing along, like that kind of stuff becomes important. Yeah, that's right, when you can.
As long as you're wearing a mask.
Yes.
That's right. 3 meters away from the worship team.
Yeah. You know, so I think it does become a matter of kind of going, this is a discipleship space. And I think even that, I mean, I'm not sure we think about Sundays as a discipleship space, which is probably one of the reasons why it's not very effective at making disciples, you know. But, so I think there's a number of ways that we've misunderstood Sundays. You know, and can I just say, I think, you know, meeting on Sundays is a very Christian thing to do. And I mean that in the best sense of the word. Mm. You know, it's the day of the resurrection. It's it's a perfect day for Christians to meet together. We've been doing it for 2,000 years. There's nothing wrong with that, and gathering together for worship and prayer and for communion and, you know, to give and to hear the word, like all that sort of stuff, very, very good. But I think that the value of the five contexts is going, you know what, there's more. There's more. And Sunday just, it can't do it all. Just can't do it all. And just like a life group can't do it all.
And I think that's it. Like when I kind of look at, generally speaking, like not just specific to GBC, but just the church as a whole, like when I think of some of the dissatisfaction that some Christians have with church, specifically church on a Sunday, it's that we clearly, like there's an innate need for the things that the other contexts provide. But as you said, we're trying to bring it all into the one context. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm going to get everything in this one spot. And so there's something in us that is identifying that, hey, there is such value for relationship. I want the relationship. Like I want those profound moments where God and I get to meet and I get to just be in his presence. Like I want to foster those things. But part of the dissatisfaction that maybe a lot of Christians are having with church is that they're trying to do it all on Sunday. And as a like it's that whole, what do they say? Master of none? Jack of all trades,
master of none.
And that's kind of maybe what we experience sometimes on a Sunday is that we're not going to experience the fullness of what a Sunday service can give us while we're trying to make it do everything else as well.
So and I think, you know, like I've heard some of those comments.
Dissatisfactions.
The elements of dissatisfaction. And I think, you know, I find it a little bit intriguing that often there's a reflection included in that because it's often from some of our older, longer term members who remember when church was something that you were in the building several times a week. And I, you know, just kind of thinking about it right now, you kind of go, so you had multiple discipleship contexts. You didn't just show up on Sunday.
No, it was Wednesday night prayer night, wasn't it?
Wednesday night prayer night, and then Thursday night there was the committee meeting, and then there was, you know, boys brigade or whatever it was.
Yep, life group, man.
You were serving or whatever the case might be.
Potluck.
Yeah, and so there were... There were other contexts at work, and I think part of what
they just so happened to all be located
at the church. And I think part of what's changed in our culture is that, I mean, those days are gone, you know, for all sorts of reasons. You know, we just you can't get everybody to show up all the time for everything at a church. And so we've got to be a little bit creative in how we develop those other contexts. But I think, again, that's where I think this series is really helpful to kind of go, oh yeah. Like I think all of us have a sense of kind of the glory days were sometime in the past, right? You know, like the experiences that we had that were quite formative for us. But to look back and go, actually, you know what? These contexts were at work. And maybe we just need to kind of think it out a little bit, because if you remove some of those additional contexts and the only thing that's left is the Sunday gathering and we haven't found adequate substitutes, replacements, alternatives, then I think it can feel very much like, oh, my experience of discipleship has collapsed into Sundays as well. So I think there's a lot in that to try to work through, because there have been some big changes in our culture. You know, this is the wrong time for this conversation, but I also reckon that there's an element of consumerism that plays a significant role in our expectations of Sunday.
Yeah.
Right, because normally when we come and sit and watch something,
we receive it, don't we?
Well, we receive it, but we're kind of conditioned to expect that it'll be kind of worth it.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not real good at things that aren't worth it, you know? And so I think there's a whole bunch of that kind of consumerism entertainment component that we bring. I don't know how you don't bring those things, you know, like I try to be a non-consumer in relationship to church, but in reality, like I've been so seeped and marinated in a consumer culture. I don't know how I don't bring that stuff with me anyway, just by default, you know? So there are, I think, some also other cultural factors at work for us about the public context that make it not harder, but make for some relatively unique challenges for us in that space.
Well, before we get into a cultural exegesis, let's move into question three.
Question three is, how does the public context overlap with the other five contexts?
And this question, I think, has been a really good one for us. I think we've returned to it. Well, this is, I think, the fifth time.
This is the fifth time. You know? Actually, I don't think we had the insight for the first context, for the divine context. We thought about it week two and we were like, oh, that's a good one.
That sounds like us. And I think that, you know, like we keep using the image of the Venn diagram and saying that we don't want five distinct circles that don't touch. But we also don't believe that there should just be one circle, one really dark circle. And I think the question then becomes when is the public context most valuable and helpful?
Yeah.
You know, or maybe not when it's the most, but I guess to recognize the different value of discipleship that the public context can bring in various stages of our lives. Like I think young families, mom and dad are going to get almost nothing out of Sundays when the kids are little because you're entertaining the kids, right? They're clawing on your feet. You're trying to keep them quiet. You're rushing them out to creche. You're picking them up from creche or whatever the case. And so at that level, I think moms and dads don't get a lot. Like because I was on staff here, I think Nicole spent like the first 5 years of our children's lives in the cry room getting next to nothing out of the service, really, because of just the stage that we're in. But we really believe that it was important for our children's discipleship to pattern and model for them.
Yep.
This is what we do. We go to church. And it's not just about what we get out of it. It's about, doing that together. And so I think that but that's different than when your kids are a little bit older, happy to go off to kids ministry or whatever the case might
be. Amen.
You know,
I'm there.
And you can actually really engage. In which case I think that part of the discipleship is about how is this going to impact the rest of my life, which is different again when your kids are older and, and when you can be the leader to help care for the kids so mom and dad can get something out of the service. So it all kind of works together in that kind of a way. So I think we have to be aware that there are different times when the public context will do different things for our own personal discipleship. And I think that's pretty valuable.
And I think it's important at this point to kind of go, that doesn't mean that you just kind of go, oh, well, this is irrelevant for me then.
No.
I think the whole premise of the Venn diagram, this illustration that we just keep coming back to, is that there will just be some that are more dominant, more profound for us, more significant and more kind of filling us up when it comes to our discipleship. And then there might be one or two just that are just kind of floating around at the back that we are engaged in, but, it is what it is.
Might not be your season.
Yeah, because like I know, you know, I've got people who I know who, church was really hard when we had little kids. And I was like, oh, we're just going to tap out until our kids are good to go.
And you don't come back in that case.
So yeah. I think that there's value in kind of going, hey, that's not the moment to kind of go, oh, well, it's not the season for the public context or it's not the season for the personal context or the social context or what have you. But to just kind of go, hey, I'm just going to acknowledge that that one is probably not going to be my fine dining. That's my meat and three veg over there.
And it'll be via podcast during the week.
Yeah, right. And that's okay. But, but it's not a hands-off entirely.
No. Yeah. I think the other way that the public context engages with the other contexts is that it is relationally the easiest to get into because the least is asked of you relationally, right? So for people who are like really hungry for relationships, it's going to be like that can be hard, right? Like I just want to meet some people and kind of – and so you want to kind of get into a life group as quickly as you can, I suppose. But it's the relational space where people can kind of check a place out.
Yeah.
and say, are these my peeps, you know, kind of thing. And and then find their kind of their way into that community. So it's a really valuable space. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, a life group is great once you get to know some people and you've been invited in, but it's still more, much more intense than a gathering of 100 people where, you know, I can engage to the point of willingness. It's pretty easy to be quiet.
Facing the same direction. Yeah. No one's looking at you across a circle. Yeah,
all that sort of stuff. So I think that, you know, that's a really valuable part for us.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly that's easier than, hey, here's a discipleship, an intentional discipling relationship. Here are your two discipleship buddies. So,
tell them,
you know,
tell them a lot.
Yeah, here's your list of transparent questions to ask each other.
So, see, I'm the extrovert, so I'm just like, that sounds like a great Wednesday night. I'm here for it. Sign me up. Someone get ready to listen.
The views of Matt Willis are not necessary.
Hold the bucket. I was about to bring it all up.
So, but I think that that's really important for us to recognize, which is why I say welcoming is so important.
Yeah.
And why we need to recognize the value, the relational place of the public context to help people kind of take their first steps in and kind of know who you are and what do we stand for and who are the sorts of people that I'm likely to encounter here and encounter a few of them and you know, all of that kind of thing. So I think that that's a really important place of overlap as well. And I think that there's also a sense that feeling like you're part of something bigger feeds into the rest of them, right? I mean, we've talked a little bit about this, but you know, like when you're in the social context or like ministry context, when you're asked to step out into something, you know, hey, would you do the talk this week? Would you lead this? Would you, you know, I hear it all the time. People are like, as soon as I said yes, it drove me to my knees.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, I've never been closer to God than when I said yes to something.
My reliance was through the roof.
Yeah, you know? And so there's something really powerful about that. So you think, well, Sundays can do some of that for us, right?
Yep.
It's the space where people are practicing perhaps in some of our ministry areas. It's a place where, you know, we are inspired and encouraged to potentially take that next step to join a ministry team or to join a life group or, you know, whatever it might be. It might fire us up to study a particular section of scripture, you know, take up one of the discipleship menus and apply that in our on our own relationship with God. So I think that it can feed into that kind of ideas and direction and next steps that then we need to take the next step for, because church can be very passive.
Right? Yeah.
Attendance at the public context can be very passive. But it's a great space to go, hey, look at the possibilities for this week. Here's some things you can read and be praying about. Here's some stuff you can be talking about with your discipleship buds about, you know, what's next. Here's something you can be talking about in your life group that relates to what we've been talking about today. Here's a ministry opportunity. So like but it's very general.
Yeah.
And the accountability is low. Can't make anybody do anything. Just suggest it. But if people take that stuff on, then there's a real sense of, hey, we're all doing this together.
Yeah.
Like we are on mission together. This is really encouraging. So I think that's the other place that it really connects.
Yeah, awesome.
So I love good. That. Yeah, loving it.
I'm loving it.
Oh, I want to do this when we're back face to face. Let's do it again.
Let's do a redo. Series.
That might be too much.
Yeah. So.
No, but I think like I'm really excited for this language to really start to permeate through our community. I think that for me and you know, we talked about this right at the very beginning, Mark, when you and I kind of sat down and did that trailer for this series, because it really felt like that this was a series for where we are at as a community of faith right now, and a very timely message and something for us to really be considering, not just as we kind of work our way through content for 9 weeks, but actually considering as we seek to be the church here in the Sutherland Shire in the 21st century. And so, you know, it really does feel like there's change on the horizon and opportunity on the horizon, which is really exciting. Mm. But I think you're absolutely right. It starts with maybe dismantling some of our preconceived ideas about what happens where, and particularly when it comes to the public context, it all happening there. And identifying, well, actually, no, it happens elsewhere as well. And if I lean into that, if I allow myself to be inspired on the Sunday to then step out somewhere else in my week, whether that's an intentional conversation with a close friend, a life group, serving, just having that quality time alone with God, then, hey, we're going to experience a real deepening in our discipleship that kind of you know, it goes beyond Sunday, which is really exciting.
Because we never stop being the church.
Because we never stop being the church.
It counts.
It counts.
It
counts.
It all counts.
It all counts.
It all counts.
Yeah, it's good. So.
I see you matter, guys. Well, Mark, Rox, thanks so much for joining us for the Big Three this week.
Oh, what a pleasure.
Pleasure, Matt.
It's been a sheer delight.
Reverend Doctor out.
Loved that. Well, that wraps up our conversation in the Big Three, focusing on the series, The Topography of Discipleship. We hope that it's been encouraging for you as you seek to dive deeper into your discipleship. The Big Three will be taking a week off, and so please be sure to join us again in a fortnight's time as we start a new series, Lives Changed by Jesus. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.